inviting me to this friendly meeting, I would say, not crowded, but selected. Now, I will be talking about the project which was initiated by Michel Dubois-Violette in Orsay, and besides me, also Svetlana Renska from our group in Sofia had contributed, and here are the archive numbers. Now, let me start a little bit from far away. Wigner articulated the axiom that a theory is preceded by the understanding of the symmetry. So Poincaré symmetry was giving us the conservation laws of energy momentum, angular momentum, and gave us the characteristic of elementary particles, mass and spin. Now, when we started with the standard model, still the Poincaré group, not speaking of gravity, still the Poincaré group was playing a central role, but there were too many particles, so some more symmetry, internal symmetry, had to be introduced. Now, let's remind ourselves what is the internal symmetry of the standard model in its representation. Well, the internal symmetry, we write a product of SU3 cross SU2 cross U1. If you are more careful, you say that you divide by part of the center, Z6. And this can be written as SU3 cross U2. And this already looks a little complicated for the symmetry of a truly fundamental theory. But when you look at the representation, it becomes really baroque. So you have, if you put the representation, the dimension of the representation as label, we have 3, 2, and the quantum number, the hypercharge corresponding to the U1, here is 1/3. And that is plus singlet here, doublet here, and minus one. And that all for the left-handed particles. And for the right-handed, it's even stranger. You have twice 3, 1, once with the hypercharge 4/3, and another one with a hypercharge minus 2/3, plus whatever you need for the leptons. Again, the hypercharge is either 0 or minus 2. Well, this really cries for some simpler explanation. And in fact, the founding fathers right away in the early 70s, 73, Patti and Salam, and 74, George and Glashow, and Minkowski, sort of grand unified theories, good, and these theories, so there were SU5 for Georgi Glashow, SO10, Georgi again and Minkowski, and Patti Salam with SU4 cross SU2 cross SU2, a semi-simple one, and they all worked way well for the basic fermions. You got the basic fermions as in the SU5 case as really as an exterior algebra. So we have the sum of lambda nu times C5, nu from 0 to 5, and this amount to 32 elements, exactly as you have the permions in one generation. Well, they split into six representations of SU5. For SO10, it looks even more concise. You have two spinor representation, 16, the left and the right one. But, as soon as you leave the basic fermions, it becomes a little more involved and less satisfactory. So, for instance, for SU5, which gained popularity in the beginning, you have the adjoint representation, 24, had to accommodate for the gauge bosons. And indeed, it did contain the 8 types. One, the gluons with hypercharge 0, and the vector and the singlet, always with hypercharge 0. But it wasn't all. It also had 6 unwanted particles, which got the name leptoquarks, with minus 5/3 and plus 5/3. And not only for the time being, we haven't found them. I mean, there are always optimists that you will find, but if you use this as a gauge, addition to the gauge bosons as the basic forces, you get proton decay, you predict proton decay in with a ratio which is contradicted already by experiment. So then, well, physicists are inventive. You take the bigger group, you choose the channel of symmetry breaking, you have more parameters, so maybe you don't have a right away contradiction, but you cannot say that it's really attractive to have this. So then came at the end of the 80s, another attempt, which really changed a little bit even the Wigner's dictum. So the beginning was not the symmetry, but the geometry, or if you like, the algebra. We have learned now to somehow not make a big difference between the two, to relate them. So there was the non-commutative geometry. It was indeed in 88, this is the date of submission of papers of Michel Dubois-Violet, Kerner, John Mador from one side, and Alain Cohn in a talk in Oxford on the other. They were published 2 or 3 years later then, and this was the beginning of non-commutative geometry approach, where you assigned a finite algebra to added to the algebra of observable functions, smooth functions on space-time. So the final short was this finite algebra, which corresponds to the standard model, was C plus the quaternion H quaternions plus, I will call it C3, the 3x3 complex matrices. Now, well, this is not too far from this group. It is like the group algebra. And anyway, it was developed for 30 years and became indeed, I mean, there are people in this audience, Madame Boyle and Shane Hartsworth, who contributed to this approach. It, within 30 years, it reached some maturity. It says something, well, can derive at least the both the symmetry and the action of the standard model, but one could still question whether where such an algebra comes from. Now, the algebraic approach to quantum theory was actually started long before. It was started in the 1930s by Pascual Jordan. And it was algebras of observables. So the point is that, well, you know that these are, say, in the finite dimensional case, Hermitian matrices, but the product, matrix product of Hermitian non-commuting matrices is no longer Hermitian, so the product xy equal a half of xy plus yx was introduced for such top matrices, and then it was axiomatized by Jordan, first that it's commutative, it's symmetrized, and secondly, it's power associative. This is the condition to have a certain positivity condition. These two conditions ensure having spectral decomposition of observables, which is the condition to have indeed quantum mechanical interpretation of observables. And if you introduce the multiplication operator Lx of y is equal to x y, the condition which Jordan found is written concisely as Lx squared is zero. And this was enough to formulate, to have spectral decomposition. Well, there was, as I said, some positivity condition, which you can say that there is a notion of trace, and the trace of x squared is positive unless x is equals zero. But Jordan actually used the kind of formal reality condition that if the square is x circle x, if x squared plus y squared is zero, it should follow that both x and y are zero. This was used by Artin before, and that gave a kind of partial order amongst the things. Then you don't have to assume Hilbert space in the formulation of non-commutative geometry. The final formulation I was referring to, you have a spectral triple call, which is an algebra, self-adjoint operator, such that its resolvent can be considered as infinitesimal, and a Hilbert space. Here you don't have to have a Hilbert space. You introduce idempotents, and this is a more invariant way of describing states, idempotents. It's not only that when you have a space, you can write instead such projection operators, and you don't have to say that psi is defined up to a phase, because the phase is canceled out in this projection operator. But it's better when we have a non-abelian group. For instance, it's good to say that the d quark, for instance, the same would be for u quark, is actually d j times d j Brian Ket sum over the color. We never see the color. We just see that it is not a primitive projection, but one with trace three. So you have the option here, when the basic notion is important, to introduce gauge invariant projections. Now, notion of state. What was nice is that, Jordan's papers were in 32 and 33. Already in 34, he enlisted the help of two friends, Hungarians, von Neumann and Wigner, and in 1934, they provided, using Peirce identity, Peirce work on algebra of the 19th century, they found that all finite dimensional Euclidean Jordan algebras can be represented as sum of simple ones in the composable ones, and the simple ones are characterized by just two non-negative, two positive integers, the rank and the degree. Roughly speaking, if you think of something like a matrix realization, and you introduce the counterpart of Weyl, Hermann Weyl unit, the R is the rank of the matrix, so it is the number of diagonal projectors, and D is the dimension of the space for Aij, which corresponds to this reference for I different from J. So, and correspondingly, the dimension of J R D is the number of non-diagonal elements, which is R over 2, times the degree, plus the diagonal elements, which are R, because EII is one-dimensional projector. So you have here the usual Hermitian matrix algebras over the reals, the complex numbers, and the quaternions. But besides them, there are two unexpected sets, J do to D. These are, again, turn out to be special. This could be represented as 2 by 2 matrices of the form X equal Xi times the unit 2 by 2 matrix, I will not write any index, plus a traceless 2 by 2 matrix, trace X 0, such that X squared is a non-negative number, which I'll denote as N of X. It is some of X mu squared mu from 0 to D, so D plus 1 of those, and each X satisfies such a quadratic characteristic equation, minus 2 Xi X plus determinant of X, where the determinant of X is something resembling the cone equation. It's Xi squared minus the norm of X, that is sum of the X squared. It's a kind of a Lorentz cone squared. Now, what the most interesting thing which came and which is lonely is the algebra G38, which is the algebra of Hermitian 3 by 3 matrices with octonionic entries, which means that the generic element of the algebra is Xi 1, X 3, X 2 star, X 3 star, X Xi 2, X1, X2, X1 star, Xi 3, where Xi are real numbers, and here the star is octonion conjugation. So you have a 27 dimensional, three diagonals and three octonions, 27 dimensional algebra, which the three authors suspected it didn't look special. Special is called an algebra for which there is an associative algebra behind, and the product is defined by symmetrization, the way written here. Now, Albert, American mathematician, the same year they assigned him did prove that this algebra doesn't have, so to speak, an associative envelope. It is indeed an exceptional. And he was Albert was the person who called these algebras Jordan algebras. A little later, and the name sticked. Now, having classification, the founding the Jordan and company were disappointed that this was the only exceptional one. They expected to have an infinite series so that could represent the basic observables of quantum mechanics, like momentum and coordinate, but there was just one, and it was later proven by Zelmanov that even in the infinite dimensional case, it's essentially multiples of this single exceptional algebra. Now, they didn't think that the finite algebra, which is exceptional, could be of any use. But now, after 30 years of non-commutative geometry, where the group is replaced by a finite algebra, it was natural to think of a finite Jordan algebra, and we found it natural to think that it is exactly the exceptional Jordan algebra, not only because we are so exceptional that our standard model should use an exceptional algebra, but there were real reasons to see that octonions did have something to do with the elementary particles. This was something noticed by Feza Gyurci back in 73 and his student Gunaydin. And the point here, you can write the octonions as two quaternions, and that was the way originally Cayley then Dixon made a construction. But what fits physics is that they can be thought of as another splitting of complex numbers plus three-dimensional complex space. If you look at them this way, then the automorphism group of octonion multiplication, which the subgroup of G2, which preserves this splitting, is precisely SU3. So it was Gyrsi who thought that this should be identified with the SU3 color group. Michel Dubois-Violette noticed that conversely, if you have a three-dimensional complex space with a scalar product, you expect U3 to be the natural group which preserves this scalar product. The fact that physics tells us that it is SU3 means that there is a volume form which is preserved, and the volume form means that there is a vector product which to two, three vectors, complex three vectors, like a third one. And when you have a scalar product and a vector product, you turns out you can combine them in an essentially unique way to a product which satisfies the composition law that X, Y, that the normed algebra such that the xy squared is x squared times y squared. And that leads to the octonion multiplication. Now, we can have the same splitting for elements of the Jordan algebra. If we denote this matrix, which I wrote here as X of Xi and X, and if we split each X as a complex number plus a three vector of complex numbers, capital Z, then X of Xi X is equal to X of Xi small Z, 3 by 3 complex matrix Hermitian, plus a 3 by 3 matrix of Z. There are three vectors, so we can use CRJ, and J is a color index, and R is, if you like, a flavor or family index. And then the automorphism group of the exceptional Jordan algebra is F4, and the subgroup which preserves this splitting is nothing but SU3 cross SU3. I will call this electroweak for reasons which I will explain in a moment, times Z3. Now, so you have two 3 by 3 unitary matrices, U and V, and they act on this splitted elements of the exceptional algebra that follows X, XZ, V star. It's unitary conjugation, so it's the inverse of V, plus U, which are so the color index times Z. This is 3 by 3 matrix times, again, V star. You see that indeed the center is preserved. This group leaves invariant an involution omega, and it's sometimes called F4 of omega is the subgroup of F4 of the exceptional group F4, which preserves the splitting into quark and leptons. Now, the subalgebra which corresponds to one generator, G28, say with matrices of this type with zeros on the first row and first column, this is the, although it involves the octonions, it is a special algebra. It is, in fact, a subalgebra of the Clifford algebra, Clifford 9. That's not quite obvious. This is 10-dimensional algebra. This is 2-to-the-9-dimensional algebra. But you can indeed insert here. And the automorphism group, the counterpart of F4 here, is just the group spin 9. The double cover of the rotation group in 9 dimensions. And we can see what is remains of the symmetry group when we restrict one generation. It is the intersection, in fact, of this F4 omega with spin 9. And this intersection, surprise, surprise, is nothing else but the group of the standard model. So at least you see that the group of the standard model here comes derived by some what is the physics behind SU3 color, it is input, we know, and quark lepton correspondence. In fact, this is, and we have this classification, and this is where we have octonions, and in fact, we seem to have three generations. Now, here, this, I see that my time is nearly over, so I will leave for the interested people in the discussion for more details, but I would like to say the following. This G28 algebra, it's only rank 2, it has 2 commuting idempotents, and that's too little for classifying fermions or something. But we can use a natural extension of it. Since we have an associative envelope, we can look in this associative envelope of the Hermitian elements. So Clifford 9 is actually equal to R16, 16 by 16 real matrices plus R16. And if we take, instead of all real matrices, the symmetric one, we got precisely 32 diagonal projectors, which correspond to the fermions in one generation. So if you are intrigued enough, I will stop here and I can tell more in the afternoon discussions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray, for the very nice talk.
It's possible to run your story for just one generation. So you said that the right algebra is Clifford 9.
Yeah.
And then maybe there is some subalgebra that preserves the splitting into leptons and quarks.
Yeah.
Is it possible to get standard model gauge group this way?
Yeah. Well, I thank you for that. That's a natural question. Of course, our aim is to describe three generations, of course, and that turns out to be a little subtle, but I can at least say a major problem which we have to face, and which we haven't really solved, a mathematical problem. It is clear, it is a consequence of Albert's theorem that there is no associative envelope of the exceptional algebra, and therefore we cannot construct similarly a Euclidean extension, which has all the properties we like, of which would be the true symmetry algebra, the true algebra corresponding to the full-fledged standard model. And the question is there a generalization, the weakening of the properties we demand from this extension? It is even clear that we should replace the extension with modules of, that is, representations of G238. But there is a theorem by Jacobson that every module of G38 is the tensor product, a free tensor product of G38 itself with a finite dimensional real vector space. So it doesn't seem very promising, this concept of many copies of G38 to give the full answer. The theory, we have some ideas, including there is a, perhaps I will use this fact as a, to intrigue you further, that there is a three-form in the Jordan algebra, which consists of the, which corresponds to the three octonions, and it is invariant not under the same action of the SO8 group, but once you act as a vector representation, and one with a representation for left eight spinners and one for right eight spinners. So there is precisely this combination, which we could think of the counterpart of Yukawa coupling that give the Higgs masses, because what is an eight vector here could well be the Higgs boson. It's a missing vector, so to speak, if you want everything to be gauge bosons, gauge vectors, it, then the, it's an eight vector in the internal space, not in ordinary space, so it could well be a scalar field in ordinary space. And so there are ingredients we can put further within the interpretation of the full exceptional algebra, but also there are problems which are not yet resolved. Is it possible to explain electric charge quantization with your approach? Certainly, I think that essentially electric charge quantization we already have in the standard model group, which is I mean, if you really look at this group, as it stands, not as its universal cover, then all generators are quantized. As long as you have U1, the eigenvalues of the generator of U1 are multiples of a long quantity. If you take, we are accustomed to look at Lie algebra, and if you look at the Lie algebra, it's R, so to speak, any charge could be there. But if you take seriously the group U1, already this tells you that all quantum numbers are quantized, and the charge is just expressed as usual formula, third component of isospin plus 1/2 the hypercharge. And since the hypercharge is quantized, when you take this group, and we do reproduce this group with even the Z6 in the denominator, so I think, but this is not our achievement, it's already there in the standard model. You may ask, why not more general projective representation of the standard model, but otherwise.
The question is, what forces you to take U1 rather than R on the line? I mean, algebraically they're the same locally, but if it's R, then charge doesn't have to be quantized. It is, as you know,
right, sure.
Why? So the question is, do you see a good reason why that is so? Because if it would have been a subgroup of SU5 or something.
Yeah. And here it is a subgroup of F4, finally, so or of spin 9, for that matter. So in effect, our group is the intersection of two semi-simple groups, SU3 times SU3 over that 3, and spin 9. So these are both compact groups which have quantized generators, and the standard model group is just the intersection of the two.
If you embed U1 into SU2 × U1 into SU3, when that breaks down to SU2 × U1, don't you get magnetic monopoles?
Yeah, I mean, so everything.
That's an interesting prediction. At what scale would I expect to see the magnetic monopoles?
You see, we are cautious not to speak of concrete predictions because one is easily tempted to plug in our scheme, once we have the groups, what people have been doing in routinely in the standard model. So since the group are there, there is room for monopoles, and we can say. The point is that this approach seems to dictate, restrict the choice of Lagrangian type of interactions, and we would like to really extract everything which does come from the original assumptions. It's a work in progress, and I don't want to claim more than we have.
I guess I'm asking that because the LHC can actually probe whether we see a unification of 2 and 1 at some scale of order 100 TeV.
Yeah. In effect, nobody, to my knowledge, has considered seriously F4 as a unification group. However, people have considered E6. The unification group, and they have considered E6 has a 27-dimensional representation, which has been exactly considered to include the 16 fermions. And the basic representation of F4, which acts as a homomorphism here, is 26-dimensional. So it is this. It is essentially the same representation which people have considered for E6. It is that representation plus the trace. So from this point of view, F4 gives a substitute of E6, which has been considered. But it gives something different too. Yes?
So I guess the usual reason that people consider E6 and not F4 for grand unification is that the E6 has complex representations and F4 has only real ones. The usual thinking is that you need complex representations to get a chiral gauge theory at the end.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm still puzzling about this whole story is how does one get, if the automorphism groups here, how does one get chiral representations? Or how do you hope to get? I know it's not a complete story.
Simple. In my definition, you could question whether this notion of chirality, which I will just tell you, is the same as everybody else is doing. But we have an analog of gamma 5, and that the structure group of the G28 algebra is spin 9-1. That's a group, it's bigger than the automorphism group. That's a group which preserves the determinant of that I wrote somewhere before. And the Lie algebra of this group belongs to the even part of Clifford 9-1. It's Clifford 9-1-0, which is isomorphic to Clifford 9. So in this Lie algebra, we have chirality is the product of all 10 gamma matrices which generate Clifford 9-1. And this operator has two eigenvalues, plus and minus one, and we say that the 16 eigenvectors with plus one are, by definition, left chiral, and the 16 with a minus are right chiral. This is our definition how we get chiral representations. And we discussed with you a little bit privately, we do need complexification, and that will come for free when we are considering only the internal symmetry part, and we'll have to multiply it, tensor it with the space-time spinners, Weyl spinners, which are complex, and so complex representation will come this way. So unlike string theory, we don't try to figure out a group which contains the Poincaré symmetry as a subgroup. We are only speaking of the internal part. And that seems to be okay.
I wonder what you. I was thinking a little bit about this, and I myself.
Postpone it to the after discussion. Sure. I was wondering, Rachel, already like 10 minutes over, so maybe it's best to, because we will have an afternoon session about this topic as well. So thank you very much for your talk.